Today's edition of the Derek Hunter Podcast is brought to you by Ancient Life Oil.
What is Full Spectrum CBD? Full Spectrum CBD is all the cannabinoids, which in turn gives you major effectiveness. CBD isolate is much less effective than Full Spectrum CBD. No herbicides, no pesticides, pure organic, non-GMO, Full Spectrum CBD. Where do you get the good stuff? At AncientLifeOil.com. That's AncientLifeOil.com. Buy CBD tinctures that work. That's AncientLifeOil.com.
Alrighty, hello again everyone and welcome to it. It is the Derek Hunter Podcast for the 6th of May. 2021. I'm having microphone issues. I think I've got it working now. I'm Derek Hunter. I am your host. Yeah, I don't know. Anyway, apologies. I'm re-recording the intro because the body of the pod is... my voice sounds weird. The microphone screwed up and I'm still trying to work it out. I think I need to get a new cable. I don't know. So apologies in advance, and I wouldn't blame you, quite frankly, if you skipped today's episode after giving it a listen. The content is excellent, by the way. The content is stellar, as always. But the quality of the recording, you just don't notice these things while you're in it, and then you're going, what the hell is this, when you're in the post? So apologies in advance, and kudos to you if you manage to trooper through the whole thing, because then you will be a true American hero. Anyway, thank you for listening, downloading, sharing a friend. I don't know what the deal is with iTunes. I know I got the emails about it's not in iTunes. They're looking into it and hopefully figure that crap out. I don't know why. It's all set up. Everything's good. It should work forever, right? Shouldn't it? This is why I hate things. I'm not a big fan of people either, but I hate things. Anyway, let's get to the program. Don't forget about the Curse Show on Saturday at patreon.com/Derek Hunter Podcast. And this show every single day. Thank you for writing and rating reviews and all that and sharing on social media and all that good stuff. Anyway, you're going to hear a shift in quality. I'm going to try and fix it and dick around with it and see if I can't make some sense of it in editing, but I don't know what happened, except for I don't know. Hopefully this sounds better. I'll find out in a minute, and you'll find out what the hell I'm talking about after I tell you first about AncientLifeOil.com. That's right, CBD oil from AncientLifeOil.com. The best CBD oil on the planet. 100% pure, 100% organic, certified. None of that gas station stuff where you don't know what's in it. It works. The stuff is great. They have a great offer this month. $5 off a starter kit so you can give CBD oil a try. And even if you're a returning customer, you get the $5 off. And don't forget promo code Derek at checkout. Enter or click apply there to get free fast shipping on top of the $5 off. See what all the fuss is about. Those little aches and pains, the anxiety, the stress, whatever it is, it just melts away. AncientLifeOil.com. Don't forget promo code Derek at checkout for free fast shipping. Okay, now the apologies are in order as the show starts now. We have to start off by talking about what everybody is talking about. And this is not the end by any stretch of the imagination. The banning of President Trump. It seems like so many news outlets are getting it wrong. Oh, Donald Trump, Facebook's advisory board has upheld the permanent ban of Donald Trump from Facebook. No, they didn't. They kicked the can down the street like they always do. They make bureaucrats look efficient sometimes, these private companies that are out there desperately trying to avoid saying anything concrete. But it's been burning up social media all day. Ooh, they're banning Donald Trump. They're keeping the ban in place because there was a lot of liberals were very upset that Donald Trump might be back on Facebook soon, and we can't have that. No, no, we don't want that. Which is rather hilarious, because the people who spend most of their time talking about Donald Trump on social media are the ones who talk about how Donald Trump isn't on social media. It's the left-wing media. They talk about him all the time. They're desperate to talk about him. They find a way to shoehorn him into every single conversation everywhere. Just, oh, he does this, this is, or this is in contrast to the way the previous administration did it, so on and so forth. But Facebook's advisory board, why can't these people, Mark Zuckerberg is worth like $100 billion. He created the thing. He can run it however he sees fit, yet they won't do it. They can't do it. He won't do it. They can't do it. He pushes it off on some advisory panel. The advisory panel says, well, we couldn't possibly decide anything. Why don't you maintain the status quo? And essentially, within the next 6 months, you have to decide what your policy is. Because they don't seem to have a policy on Facebook or on Twitter or in any of these social media things. Except you must punish conservatives. That's it. Anybody who doesn't go along with the liberal groupthink, anybody who refuses to conform, will run risk of or eventually be banned completely from this. They'll certainly be throttled. I know I've been throttled on social media. I've had 10,000 followers stripped from me from Twitter. And every time my account, my followers goes up, it goes back down within a couple of days. I don't know what I did to attract those people, but I kept doing it. It's not like somebody goes, oh, I like his snarky attitude. And then a day later go, I don't care much for that snarky attitude. People are being unfollowed. I used to get several thousand followers a month. Now I will have a net gain of like 2 in a month. It just seems statistically impossible, except for the fact that I know that I'm shadow banned because people tell me my tweets don't show up for them anymore. But Facebook, well, Twitter's never going to welcome Donald Trump back. They're just not going to. Facebook was toying with the idea of letting him back because of whatever reason they banned him for in the first place. It's kind of ironic that platforms that allow the Iranian government to denounce the existence of Israel and call for the destruction of Israel say that tweeting about and posting about how the 2020 election was stolen or even questioning the outcome, that will get you banned forever. That's a bridge too far. Calling for the decimation of the only Jewish state on the planet Earth, it's a gray area. Could go either way. That lets you know where these social media outlets fall, and it is firmly on the left. But Facebook's oversight co-chair, a guy named Michael McConnell, said that Facebook either has to restore Trump's account, restrict him permanently, or suspend him for a set amount of time. That was the conclusion of this panel that everybody in media has been waiting for. Oh, what are they going to do? What are they going to do? And they said, well, you got to do one of three things, which is the ultimate bureaucratic move. You don't generally get that kind of wishy-washy, mealy-mouthed, we're not really saying anything while saying a lot of things, word salad outside of a mid-level bureaucrat in the federal government. They can justify their jobs as good as anybody, but everybody else kind of goes, oh, my job is to do X. All right, well, then I'll do X. Why? Because you'll get fired if you don't do X. My job is to do 3 hours of radio a day. If I go 2 hours, 15 minutes ought to cut it, I'll be fired, and it would be absolutely justified. Just sitting there, you know, all I got in me is 2 hours today. So enjoy show tunes for the last hour, or in the middle hour, I'm just going to play show tunes because I want to nap and have a good sandwich. That's not the way it works. You have a job to do. Bureaucrats don't suffer from having jobs to do. They have a job that seems to be spent justifying their jobs. And apparently the oversight board, the advisory board on Facebook is the same thing. But the point is, they're telling Facebook, and this is a little bit of an embarrassment for Facebook, even though this is being billed as Facebook upholds the permanent ban of Donald Trump. They didn't, really. They basically said, you either got to kick him off, give him back his account, or set a certain amount of time that he's suspended for. And that accountability, that standard, has to be applied to everybody. Because it seems to be a policy, it's not even a policy, just decisions made because it's Donald Trump. it's Donald Trump. That's it. If you can have the head of the Iranian terror state out there spewing whatever they want, and the Chinese communist government not only spewing whatever they want and sending out their social media or their state-run media, and a whole bunch of bots that are created to amplify that, to pretend to be real human beings, to amplify Chinese state-run media. How can the former president of the United States be denied access to it? Now, realistically, it's a private company. They can do what they want. But a private company opens itself up to all sorts of liability if they have a policy that is not applied equally. You can apply even bad policy if you want to, if you want to be that company. You just have to apply it evenly to everybody across the platform. And what this mess with Donald Trump is showing is that they don't. They don't do that at all. They don't even come close to doing that. So that's where the advisory board is. That's where the media is getting it completely and totally wrong. The advisory board, the oversight panel, gave them 6 months to figure it out. So, again, it shouldn't take very long. If you won't want Donald Trump on your platform, you just say, okay, we are not going to restore this account ever, and here are the lines that if you cross, you will permanently lose your account, whether you're the former president of the United States or some steel worker somewhere. It doesn't matter. Everywhere in between. If you're a busboy in California or the president of the United States, if you cross these lines, you're out. And you're out for good. That would be fine. It's the unequal application that's a problem. And it should be not just president of the United States. If you call for the extermination of the Jewish state, you might, I don't know, have your account suspended for a while. Iran. Maybe that would be a good policy, too. That was the decision of the advisory board, not the story you're hearing that Donald Trump will be continued to be banned. Yeah, he will be continued to be banned as the board forces them to make a decision to do their business or get off the pot. Meanwhile, the president, the former president, is not restricted. He started his, well, again, this is a story that is really poorly reported. So much of this, I don't know if it's because they want to be first or because they just don't understand how things work. The story, big story yesterday was Donald Trump has launched his own social media platform. Donald Trump didn't launch his own social media platform. He has a blog on his website, DonaldJTrump.com. There's a difference. There's no silencing Donald Trump. They say, well, he can post this, that, and the other thing. Yes, he can, just like anybody else. The difference is his servers can't be stripped by Amazon the way that other websites have seen their servers stripped by Amazon or by any other company. They're on their own servers, so this won't go anywhere. So Donald Trump still has a voice, and it's hilarious to me why these platforms even bother banning him, because the second he posts something on DonaldJTrump.com, about 800,000 people screen capture it and post it on social media. So it's all by proxy. In many ways, it reminds me of the line from Star Wars when Darth Vader and Obi-Wan Kenobi were having their big standoff. And they said, you can't win, Darth. If you strike me down, I shall become more powerful than you can possibly imagine. Didn't really make a whole lot of sense in the context of the movie, but the line does here. These social media companies tried to silence Donald Trump, and in trying to silence Donald Trump, they ended up amplifying him in more ways than they ever imagined, because the liberal journalists post what he says, and his fans now post what he says. The fans were, you know, retweeting it, but they weren't all on there at the same time. They didn't do it for every post. Now every single post has hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people going, here's what the former president says. It's just stupid. The social media platforms made him have bigger reach by banning it. So in many ways, I'm not sure Donald Trump really wants to be back there. Because he's more powerful now. He's the force Trump over there glowing in the corner over everybody's shoulder.
in every utterance on his website goes and is spread wildly. In fact, on this decision this morning at 11:21 a.m., he posted on, it's from the desk of Donald J. Trump, is what it's called. That's what the header says, but the website is donaldjtrump.com. Says, what Facebook, Twitter, and Google have done is a total disgrace and embarrassment to our country. Free speech has been taken away from the President of the United States because the radical left lunatics are afraid of the truth. But the truth will come out anyway, bigger and stronger than ever before. The people of our country will not stand for it. These corrupt social media companies must pay a political price and must never again be allowed to destroy and decimate our electoral process. Well, there's no doubt that they meddled in our election. See, the left loves that they, social media, meddled in our election. Try to send out the Hunter Biden story before the election from the New York Post, and you were not allowed to. If you found a way to get around it, there was a good chance they were going to ban you. The story proved to be true, but even members, former members of the so-called intelligence community, the nonpartisan intelligence community, were out there lying, saying this is Russian intelligence, this is Russian disinformation, and it wasn't Russian disinformation. In fact, they were Russian disinformation. But the idea that they can silence somebody, I don't know, I don't care that much about somebody being banned from social media if they clearly violated well laid out rules. They want to set up guardrails. They want to decide you can't say this, that, or the other thing on their platform. Fine. That's their platform. They can do what they want. It's when it's the rules, the lines are not lines. They're cooked spaghetti noodles. And they're squiggly, and they're malleable, and they're made of Play-Doh or whatever, and you can just move them and bend them and bow them and do whatever you want and find a way to, I don't like this person. It's clear that Twitter, for example, is run by liberals. And so they go, I don't want this guy to be able to say anything, so I'm going to bend this rule down to there to scoop them up. And there, they've crossed the line, moved the line, and now you've crossed the line without doing anything. One thing I will say about these bans is they're all predicated on January the 6th. They're all predicated on the idea that what Donald Trump did, he incited that mob, the only history's only armed insurrection without arms. It's a miracle. You know, you should be afraid of somebody with that kind of power, that you can incite an armed insurrection that doesn't involve any arms. But they say that he incited that violence on that day. What they don't say is how. You ever notice that? It's just gospel truth. Donald Trump incited the violent armed insurrection of January the 6th, and they show no examples of it. They kind of come around and try to say, well, he did it by repeating the big lie that the election was stolen. That is not a call to arms. That is not a call to arms. That is not a pick up your pitchforks and go tear down the Capitol, even if it's true. It's not a call to arms, especially when it's contradicted or juxtaposed against him literally saying, go down to the Capitol and peacefully have your voices heard. They don't ever play clips from Donald Trump's speech that day, because clips from Donald Trump's speech that day don't make the case that they're trying to make. So they just say, he did it. Let's just forget about the whole thing. He did it. It's all his fault. And there's no questioning. There's nobody in the newsroom who dare speak up. If they employ anybody who would be inclined to speak up, they've got to be soiling themselves in the corner at the prospect of their thoughts, their internal monologue, ever being discovered by their colleagues. That's the tyranny of it. It's kind of funny because the left spent 4 years telling us that Donald Trump was a totalitarian in waiting, in training. He's just waiting to pounce. He was right there. At any moment, he was going to disband Congress and seize all power for himself. And they tell that to people to justify what they're doing to us. Not just Donald Trump. Donald Trump is just the most visible person of it. The silencing of dissenting opinion. The demand for conformity. Period. End of story. That's what they want. And they're saying they're doing it in the name of protecting us from what's really, really bad. In order to protect you from what's really bad, I have to do really bad things. There's a lot of history. People who've done the exact same playbook. They're all on the left, and you can find them pretty easily if you just open your eyes. Like I said, none of this is by accident. None of this is based on truth either. Honestly, I don't know why President Trump would want to go back on social media. He is much stronger without it, to be honest with you. And to have editors, you can avoid more Covive or whatever that was that he tweeted, more Covive disasters if he has somebody editing his thoughts and putting them up on his website. But the media is obsessed with this story because the media is obsessed with social media. The New York Times has a story. Billie Eilish, who's a singer, a young, very young singer, she's mostly known for wearing like really big, bulky, flabby t-shirts and things like that. I don't know her music and her green hair. She did the cover of Vogue, where she's in lingerie and trying to look all sexy and everything. New York Times did a story, the headline, on that bombshell Billie Eilish cover for British Vogue. The pop star, known for defying gender stereotypes, got a glamour makeover with a corset. Not everyone is happy about it. The New York Times, oh, not everyone is happy about it. Well, it turns out that the entire story is based on one Twitter account that was established in December, has only 3 followers, and has tweeted only once, griping about Billie Eilish's Vogue cover, tweeted only once in English. That's now what constitutes news. So you can see why they're obsessed with this story about Trump and social media, whereas normal people are not. And this Billie Eilish story really is ridiculous. Jonathan Chait, who's a writer for New York Magazine, chastised, because literally that New York Times story is predicated on one single tweet about how not everybody's happy about Billie Eilish's new look. Honestly, if you're not happy about Billie Eilish's new look, you need to take up knitting or something. You need a hobby if you care at all about this. But it was one tweet by somebody called Stewin. I don't make these names up. I assume they're generated randomly by a bot. And it was, the entire tweet was before, : unique, different, a class of her own. After, mainstream, exchangeable, slick, and polished. Why? With 4 question marks. That was it. And the New York Times said, oh, Billie Eilish has a new thing, but not everybody's happy about it. Yeah, one dude with 3 followers, only one tweet in English, is upset about it. I'm not sure why President Trump would want to get back on this platform. And I don't know. I sit there and go, why am I on this platform? Sometimes, too. But Jonathan Chait said correctly, liberal big limb, stop writing news stories entirely about Twitter controversies. Okay, I agree. And then he follows it up and says, Twitter mob gets person fired from job. That's a news story. People on Twitter angry about something? Not a news story. Like, don't you understand, Mr. Chait, that the second point you make leads to the first point you made? Then neither one of them are news. Getting people upset on social media is one of the easiest things to do on the planet Earth. It's not a news story. Until every single human being on Twitter or social media is verified for who they are, and their user picture is them. Imagine the internet. You want to solve half of the vitriol on social media, on the internet. There's a simple way to do it. If you, not on the internet, but on your platform. If Twitter care, Twitter seems to care so deeply about this. We can't have Donald Trump saying mean things on Twitter. And Facebook cares about this. We can't have Donald Trump saying mean things on Facebook. There are simple ways to handle this. And one simple way would do it more than just about anything else. You have to prove who you are to them. If you want to use their service, and then I would say, you know, no holds barred. Go absolutely crazy. Say whatever you want. No community standards. If you want to threaten violence, knock yourself out. The whole world will be there to see it, and there'll be real world consequences for that because it's your name and your face. You have to prove where you live, and it's all right there. You want not your address or anything like that, but you want to know who somebody is who's telling us. I've had people tell me they want to cut my head off. They want to kill me. They want to do this. They want to do that. They want to do the other thing. And they used to be the little egg emoji or whatever that was your default on Twitter. And then they just upload random photos of things. And their names are no indication and not even related to human beings. And they just create these accounts to go around threatening people. I don't like what you say, therefore you should die. And they do it to try and scare you. They don't know anything about you. And if you ever saw them in real life, they would soil themselves and run in the other direction. But they are out there. If you wanted to raise the tone... And the left doesn't want to raise the tone. They want to control it. They want their army to be able to threaten people all they want. You can dox people, for example, which is giving out their personal information, phone numbers, addresses, and whatever. It's kind of funny. I've been doxed, too, but they used old addresses. And the guy who owns the house that we used to rent is a lifelong NRA member. I'm not really sure that... That people would want to show up there going, where is that Derek Hunter? We hate him. We want to get him. And a guy comes out with a nice assault rifle greeting them on his front lawn. I don't think they would appreciate that very much because it also wouldn't be me. But if you want to do that, make people put their names to these things. Imagine what you could say and what you could do online and how much... better, how elevated the discourse would be if you knew who was saying what. That way, if somebody says something wildly outrageous or wildly threatening, you could say, all right, well, I see that you work for Company X. You think Company X would appreciate their employees threatening people's lives? No, they wouldn't. A couple people getting fired over that would cause everybody else to go, oof. I can still have these thoughts, but I'm not going to broadcast them to the world. And then you'd raise the civility of the discussion, if that's what you want. I don't know. There's a real question in my mind. It's a chicken and egg scenario. I can't figure out which it was. I am a wildly cynical person to begin with. So I don't know whether or not the internet created a whole bunch of horrible people, or if these horrible people were always there and the internet just freed them to be horrible people. I don't know which it is. It's a chicken and egg scenario, but I do know that anonymity is the petri dish in which that grows. There aren't many people out there. It took some time, took a lot of trial and error, but there aren't that many people out there saying wildly inappropriate, horrible, racist, sexist, homophobic death threats going around that, I mean, now the left has lowered the bar to what constitutes most of those things. We're all guilty of that to some degree, but real things. Real things, not the imagined left-wing things. There aren't many people out there saying those things with their name attached to it. They weren't screaming, these are things and these are people, and I you know these people who do it online under the banner of anonymity. And if you know them in person, they've done nothing like it. Because I know people who on Twitter act like they're 10 feet tall and they're a ripped MMA fighter. Talking real big about, and I know these people, and like you're a doughy middle-aged guy who grunts getting off the couch. You if this kid showed up to fight you at a predetermined point, you might have to be hospitalized at the prospect of it. A flight of stairs takes it out of you. Why are you saying you wouldn't say that to my face? No, they probably wouldn't say that to their face because their people are politer in person. Maybe the pandemic added to this. Maybe people being locked up and not having interactions with real human beings, they're forgetting how to have interactions with real human beings. And when restrictions continue to get lifted, it'll all become a big street brawl. Who knows? I don't know what's going on with society. It just is headed in a bad way. It's headed in a bad way. But I do know that Donald Trump being banned from Facebook, I wouldn't have a problem with it if there were hard and fast rules where anybody can be banned from Facebook permanently. Then we all know the rules. But they change their terms of service more often than Apple does every time there's an update to their iOS. You're sitting there and you're going, what did I just agree to? Here's 80 pages of legalese that I can't use my phone until I agree to. So, like, all right, go ahead. It doesn't matter. Go ahead. So, yeah, if that's your big thing, I'm not really sure. What I would like to see, though, and this is a difference between liberals and conservative billionaires. The liberal billionaires, they create these companies, they run these companies. Conservatives might try to create an alternative, which is not going to be effective. It's just not. You're never going to outdo Facebook. You're not going to out-Facebook Facebook. People at this point, Facebook will eventually crap out as something new comes along and the next generation or whatever, whenever it happens, they will sort of invest their lives into that platform over. They don't want to be on the platform with their parents and grandparents and aunts and uncles where everybody's watching them. They don't want that, so they're going to look for something else. Natural attrition. But the current users on Facebook are going to be current users on Facebook by and large till they're dead, and then long after, because so many of our memories, so many of our posts, so many of our quips, so many of everything are there already, that migrating that or starting over just seems like too much work. We're used to it. So rather than try and build another Twitter, and I never understood and I always catch hell for this, but I never understood the appeal of Parler. It's just not, it was clunky to use, nobody was there. All I saw was people basically sending out tweets they'd already sent out on Twitter on Parler. Like, well, I can go back to the easy user interface that I'm used to and just see it there. But instead of that, imagine taking that money, the Mercers, billionaire investors. They take their money and they start buying up Twitter. They maybe get together with the living Koch brother. They get together with other billionaire conservatives or people with hundreds of millions of dollars or whatever, and they start buying up Twitter, especially when the stock goes down all the time when they do something wildly stupid. Buy it up. Get a controlling interest. Then change that company from the inside rather than trying to create a new one. You want to create a new one? I get why you want to create a new one. The first one is worth billions of dollars. So if you go, well, if we can create our own, we'll have billions of dollars. That's great. It's wonderful. It's smart. It's dumb in that you're probably not going to be able to do it, especially if you do it in a clunky way. But hey, knock yourself out on that front. But that's if you just want to make money. Nothing wrong with just wanting to make money. But if you're saying, I want to make money and a difference, you can't really do both in that sense, in this circumstance. You have to pick one or the other. If you want to make money, okay, good luck. You're probably not going to succeed, but it's your money to do it. If you want to make a difference in how social media polices itself, you throw that money into Twitter stock, and suddenly you can band together with other stockholders, shareholders, and what have you, and then make change internally to the company. Imagine ousting Jack from Twitter because you bought a controlling interest, or have enough people who are already on your side and you have, you know, enough stock on your own that you band together and you can get rid of Jack. That would make a bigger difference than trying to create the 15th platform, trying to change or compete with Twitter. It's just not going to work that way. You got to think strategically, or, you know, honestly, I think the Mercers would much rather make money. They're willing to fund conservatism. That's great. That's all well and good. But their real money, they're willing to invest in things, in pipe dreams, in the hopes that one of them will pay off. And what do they know? Well, I don't know. They've made billions of dollars. But you can't really do both simultaneously. Because if you say, we're starting this to be a conservative version of that, well, then you've just alienated half of your potential customer base that are never going to, liberals are never going to go to Parler under any circumstances. And a lot of us like to engage with liberals. We want to see what's going on with these liberals so we know what they're trying to do to us. Well, you can create your little echo chamber, or you can try and take over the microphone. I suggest you try and take over the microphone. But then again, I'm not even a millionaire, so what the hell do I know? They're rich, it's their money, but if they want to make a difference, I think that's the way to go about it. Let's talk a little bit about President Fauci and the coronavirus, because he appeared on the Today Show this morning. He's on the Today Show once a week, twice a week, I don't know what it is. It's always puff piece interviews. But Savannah Guthrie was pointing out that now that these restrictions are being lifted on normal human beings outside, you know, because either the rules or the science is either there or the science is not there. It's pretty simple. Just tell us what the truth is and we can figure out how we best want to act. But that doesn't empower the government at all. So it doesn't seem to be important to these people. So President Fauci is on there, and Savannah Guthrie asks about the rules for summer camp. Now, again, I don't think that many people are concerned about the rules for summer camp, because at least in my world, nobody's going to summer camp. I didn't know anybody went to any kind of camp. We went camping, which meant we, you know, put a tent out in dirt in Mayo, Michigan, near a pond, and that was it. We had a campfire and well water and everything, and that was heaven for us at that time when we were real young kids. But, like, camp where you have a cot? No. We had sleeping bags on dirt. That was it. But apparently, there's a big concern about kids being sent to camp, and I can see why people who didn't grow up in New York City would want to send their kids somewhere for the ability to see a tree that isn't, you know, covered in homeless guys defecating on it. So there's that. And Fauci inadvertently illustrates that they have no idea what they're doing. That they have no idea what they're doing. When you lose Savannah Guthrie, when she's even saying, why do these kids have to double bag their faces in camp, outside? When you're losing that, you're losing the battle. And the CDC, I think, is recognizing that, and they're having to let go of their tight grip on power ever so slightly. And they will. They will eventually, because people will just have had enough. Most of us have already had enough. But when you're losing the liberal media elite, you've got a problem. Listen to Savannah Guthrie ask President Fauci about this.
And let me stay on the subject of kids, because summer camps are coming up and a lot of parents are looking forward to sending those kids out and hoping they have a great summer since they weren't able to last summer. But the CDC guidelines right now for kids in summer camp say masks must be worn at all times, even outdoors, by everyone, including vaccinated adults and children as young as 2 years old. And campers should stay 3 feet apart, even outdoors. My question to you is, given what research shows about transmission outside, about the low risk of serious illness in children, are these CDC guidelines excessive?
Are these CDC guidelines excessive? That's a perfectly legitimate question. Now, it shouldn't be framed in the summer camp thing, because, again, I don't think that particularly applies to that many people, at least in my experience. But it should be, you know, you send your kid out to go play in the schoolyard. Do they even do that anymore? Do kids do anything that involves the rest of their body beyond their thumbs clicking buttons? I don't know. But it's a perfectly valid question that has larger implications that the CDC isn't really going to, or isn't ready to, or willing to, or comfortable addressing. And so Fauci kind of nervously giggles. And the giggle's a giveaway. You giggle, you laugh when somebody's got you. You got me. I don't know. I don't know. And then he goes on with psychobabble and tossing a word salad that doesn't really mean a whole hell of a lot. Listen to him try and explain what's going on here.
You know, I wouldn't call them excessive, Savannah, but they certainly are conservative. And I think what you're going to start to see is really in real time, continually reevaluating that for its practicality. Because you're right. People look at that and they say, well, is that being a little bit too far right now?
Yeah, because aren't we supposed to be? We've been told, people have been preaching for a year, follow the science. The science doesn't suggest those CDC guidelines are too sensible for little kids outside in 90-degree heat running around with masks.
Yes, Amanda, you've asked me that question a couple of times before.
You've asked me that a couple of times before. Yeah, because your answer is wildly unsatisfactory. You're not answering. You're not treating us like adults, Tony. That's the problem. And you don't like it because you don't want to say, look, all right, we overcorrected before. We overcorrected. When you had the paddle boarder out in California, the lone guy in the Pacific Ocean being arrested, there were more police officers down there on the beach waiting for him to come ashore than anything else, than anybody else on the entire strip of miles of beach out there. You start connecting those dots, it doesn't make any sense. So you go, hey, Tony, the guy was under bigger risk of COVID from the police officers who came and arrested him than from the fish who were hoping he might drop some bread in there, or the shark who goes, I'd really like to eat this guy. That was the bigger threat to COVID, was him being arrested, than it was him being out on the ocean. Because it was, and there was literally no risk of him getting COVID from the police officers arresting him, because it was 80 degrees and they were outside at the beach and there was a nice breeze. But once you start letting go of some control, once you start treating people like adults in one area, they're going to want to be treated like adults in other areas. And the government does not want people treated like adults. This government in particular does not. So you get mixed messages. And every time somebody slips up and says, you know, I think you could probably do that, they say, well, the next day, whoa, no, we're walking that back. There could be an entire book written on the contradictions of the CDC, or the contradictions of Fauci. One day, we encourage women who are pregnant to get the vaccine. And then the next day they go, well, I mean, women who are pregnant can get it. We don't have an opinion one way. You can. You're eligible for it. And you go in there, well, what the hell is it? Is it safe or is it not safe? Well, get the vaccine and we'll get back to normal. Now get the vaccine and don't act in any way, shape, or form like normal. Whatever you do, for the love of God, don't take off that second mask. They can't even say, you know, if you get vaccinated, you can only wear one mask. No, they're still double masking. You got Joe Biden running around with 18 masks on his head, confused all the time, in the middle of a field of dandelions and weeds with his wife, and they're both masked. What's going on? Why can't you just let us be adults? Instead, you get these ridiculous pronouncements by President Fauci. Now, Savannah Guthrie then circles back and asks again, and Fauci still can't do it, but he implies that we're probably going to be changing it soon. What has changed? Why don't you just say we're understanding more? Why can't you just admit we got it wrong before? He can't do it. He won't do it. This guy has a reputation, an unearned reputation, an imposed reputation of being able to walk on water, when in reality, his track record has him on both sides of every issue. That's the skill of a bureaucrat. That's how you know Fauci is not seeing patients. The patients don't want to hear the hemming and hawing about, oh, geez, it might be this, it could be that, we could try this, we're not really sure how it's going to go. Patients want to know, what are you going to do to make me better? that's it. What's the best way to make me better? Don't lay out the choices and go, well, we might do this and this could work, but we don't. No, what do you recommend? All of your schooling, what do you recommend at best? That's why doctors don't mess around. They're not dilly-dallying in the office going, I don't really know. We should probably talk about this because there's pros and cons to everything. No, this is the most effective thing. We should try this first. If that doesn't work, we go to this. And then if that doesn't work, we go to this. But we're going in order of efficacy and period, end of story. Fauci hasn't seen a patient since the late 60s. He's a mid-level bureaucrat, but he has the doctor thing. So he ends up spewing this tripe that makes no sense and no scientific sense whatsoever. But he's dealing with Savannah Guthrie, so she's only going to push back so hard. Listen to this.
Yeah, well, you're right. The CDC makes decisions based on science. They will continually reevaluate that. You're right. It looks a bit strict, a bit stringent, but that's the reason why they keep looking at that and trying to, you know, reevaluate on literally in real time whether or not that's the practical way to go.
And just making it up as we go along. We don't know. Look, now enough people are grousing. People last summer were scared to death, so we could tell them to do anything. Now people are going, wait a second, this is, there's new data. We know the survivability rate for people under 75 is much less. We can't keep people in their 30s and 40s terrified anymore or as worried as they once were, and they're going to start revolting. The easiest way to handle a situation like that is to go the way Barack Obama did. You lead from behind. The people are going, no, we're going to start doing this. I don't give a damn what you say anymore. And then you go, okay, well, the science says you can probably do this. We're going to change it soon. We're going to do this. Don't tell me you're going to change something soon. Change it. Don't pretend like you have no sway over this, Fauci. It's your decision. You can make it happen in the snap of a finger. But you don't want people to know that because you're a mid-level bureaucrat who's the most highly paid government employee in the country, and you like that job, and you love the fawning of the press. They're just making this up as they go along, and nobody's calling them out on it. The next question from Savannah Guthrie was not, it was the end of the interview, but it should have been, why does it seem like you're just making this up as you go along? Where was the science ever for this? Where was the science ever for this? You can't say that the science has changed because the science never existed for this. So don't give me, we're learning more. You've learned nothing that contradicts the fact that the science was never with you on this. Where did these decisions come from in the first place then? They're never going to ask that. That should be given journalism awards, but it won't be given journalism awards. And if anybody ever stepped up and asked that question, oh, they'd be applauded. They'd get golf claps and news, and the clips would make the rounds, and then they would slowly see their contract not renewed, and they would be uninvited from polite society. That would be the way that would be handled if somebody steps up. But I just wanted to give you an update on what President Fauci is saying, because he's still making it up as he goes along, and they still think of him as a god. I want to shift it up a little bit and talk about some other things while we still have the time, because I'm looking at the news and looking at the Twitter feed and everything, and this story just, you read something and you're embarrassed for the person who wrote it, and you're embarrassed for the people in it. And this is one of those situations. Eric Wempel, who is the Washington Post media critic, I always talk about how the media now reports on the media almost more than anything else. He tweeted out a story from the Washingtonian magazine. Reporters blindsided by the return of competence and civility to the White House briefing room. Now, that's his commentary, and that lets you know where the Washington Post is coming from. But when Jeff Bezos is your boss, it doesn't matter. There are no consequences, and there are no standards. But you click on the link and go to the story. And the title of the story is "The Awkward Feeling of Rooting for the White House Press Secretary." Now, this is journalism. And I have to keep reminding yourself throughout this that this is supposed to be journalism. The subheadline: half of America is smitten with Jen Psaki, which is news to me. while a swath of the White House press corps sounds quite taken with how polite she is. See, she's not a liar up there like under the Trump administration. She's Ginger Goebbels. She delivers her garbage with a smile and a wink and a, I'll circle back to you on that. They write, in her first 3 months on the job, White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki has yet to be caught in an unhinged lie or spontaneous infomercial. They're lying about that. Just yesterday, Jen Psaki blamed the border surge that Joe Biden inspired on the Trump administration. It doesn't get much more blatant than that, but when you're a blatant liar, one of your own teammates lies, who cares? And she does not refer to the reporters who sit before her in the briefing room each day as the enemy of the people. No, she doesn't have to. There are not many people who call out their own teammates. Honestly, this is life inside Jen Psaki's colon, for just being honest. That's what this should be entitled. Still, it would be a disservice to compare her solely to her predecessors. And then they list the former Trump secretaries, both to Psaki, who is, quote, one of the most well-qualified press secretaries we've ever had, says ABC News chief Washington correspondent Jonathan Carl, and to the rest of us who deserve to expect more from our public servants than, well, it could be worse, and perhaps are too easily wooed by what one could describe as little more than competence porn. See, everybody who worked for the Trump administration is wildly incompetent. Everybody who works for the Biden administration is just amazing. They're wonderful. And they go, and they actually, Jonathan Carl of ABC News said that. She's one of the most well-qualified press secretaries we've ever had. Well, as a former press secretary of the United States Senate, I can tell you that it's not a difficult job. The hardest part of the job is putting aside your personal opinions. That's it. Your job, and there are plenty of decisions that my boss made, Senator Burns, that I didn't agree with. Up until the moment he made those decisions, he allowed any of us on staff, and I did it quite often, to argue with him. Go, hey, you know, I think you should vote against this, or maybe you should consider this, or what about this, that, and the other thing. Sometimes you could have some influence, sometimes you couldn't. But once the decision was made, your job, as it is to sell his message. That was it. So in that sense, Jen Psaki going out there and doing whatever she does is not a reflection on her character. She's selling somebody else's opinion. She wasn't elected to anything. I wasn't elected to anything. No matter what I thought of something, I had to go and represent the guy who was elected to something. It's not hero's work. But it's different when you're sitting out there in front of 40 people who are all badgering you about things that are irrelevant to the news of the day and pulling up your old tweets and saying, you said this about Donald Trump back in 2015. Do you still believe that? Jen Psaki has been critical of Joe Biden over the past 4 years when he wasn't in the White House. She has not been asked about that at all, because all of these people in the press corps act like somebody who went to their wedding, went to Jen Psaki's wedding, act like somebody who hopes Jen Psaki will show up to their wedding. They're friends. She takes questions from everybody, says Jonathan Carl, who has covered four presidents and more than a dozen press secretaries. She doesn't get rattled. She doesn't lose her cool. Now, under what circumstances would she have to lose her cool? There is no Jim Acosta standing up, yelling at her, interrupting her, trying to cut her off and accusing her of lying in the middle of a sentence. Nobody does that, not even Peter Ducey, who is the only person who asks her semi-tough questions up there on the White House. So it's really easy not to lose your cool. How often, while having drinks with friends and all having a good time, do you get into a heated argument with a friend about something? You all agree. She's a pro, you know, says Peter Baker, chief White House correspondent for the New York Times. She's unflappable. And it just goes on from there. It's probably about 2,000 words of the longest, deepest, wettest butt kiss in history. So David Hersiani, I never knew how to pronounce his last name, who writes for National Review, upon seeing this, compiled a list of just headlines from various news outlets to show the hostility of the press towards Joe Biden, shall we say. Joe Biden and Kamala Harris. Hostility, of course, being hilariously ironic. The first one, he says, comes from E! Online, E! Entertainment Television, because Democrats are in charge now and Hollywood cares again, and they've just run puff pieces like this headline. All the times Joe Biden's love of ice cream melted our hearts. This was written by somebody named Allison Crist on January the 16th. He hadn't even gone into the Oval Office yet. And she, this adult human being, writes the first sentence. For President-elect Joe Biden, a day without ice cream is practically unconstitutional. Get it? If I'd written something like that, I would find the tallest structure possible, climb it, and jump off of it as quickly as humanly possible. But it's not just little puff media outlets that cover entertainment. CNN headline, Joe Biden and Kamala Harris drop a playlist for your inauguration watch party. Yeah, who didn't have an inauguration watch party? Then there's, of course, Kamala Harris on the cover of Vogue magazine, because who is a bigger fashion icon? Vogue magazine really picks them. 4 years of ignoring the hottest supermodel first lady we've ever had, never made the inside pages of Vogue. Now Kamala Harris right on there. CBS News, tomorrow on CBS News Sunday, Vice President-elect Kamala Harris and her husband, Douglas Emhoff, sit down with Jane Pauley and open up about their relationship and the story behind those Converse sneakers. Can you smell the Pulitzer? The Washington Post. Most people know her as Jill Biden, but to some, she is Dr. B, the compassionate and challenging educator who went the extra mile. Oh, I want to throw up in my mouth a little bit. God, she's just Dr. B, hanging with Dr. B. Every time she talks, she sounds like a demented kindergarten teacher just this side of snapping and killing everybody. Glenn Kessler, fact checker for the Washington Post, headline, get ready for reality-grounded White House press briefings. Well, it's amazing those fact checkers haven't found anything that Jen Psaki, Ginger Goebbels, might have said that was wrong. They went in going, get ready for some real talk. God help us all. Lauren Wolf, former editor at the New York Times, Biden landing at Joint Base Andrews now on Inauguration Day. I have chills. I have chills. Then back to the Washington Post. Perspective in fashion. Joe Biden and Kamala Harris display their common ground. Yeah, they both wear business suits. Congratulations. It goes on from there. It gets worse from there. Remember when David Chalian at CNN, their chief political analyst, whatever the hell he is, the lights at the Lincoln Memorial down the reflecting pool, he said, it's like extensions of Joe Biden's arms embracing America. An adult male human being said that. These are all adults. These are all supposedly journalists and professionals. I can prove chronologically that they're adults, but as for the rest of it, I see no evidence whatsoever, and I'd be embarrassed if I were them. Absolutely embarrassed. So Ginger Goebbels is the ultimate truth teller, according to the White House press corps. So at the press briefing today, she was asked about this running story that's not getting a lot of play, certainly not getting as much play as it deserves, about the teachers' unions having a huge sway over CDC guidelines. Yes, the CDC, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, that is only guided by the science. Only guided, it turns out that science is political science, but they're only guided by the science, or so we're told by them. They're why you have to double mask when you go anywhere, because the science. The science. Well, the teachers' unions had a huge say in schools reopening. Teachers' unions did not want the schools, in fact, reopened. And so even though the science clearly showed that schools should be reopened, that children do not get or transmit COVID, thank God, and there's really no cases of outbreaks in schools where people have gotten seriously ill or even large numbers of kids have been even tested positive for it, still the teachers' unions managed to change CDC guidelines to allow for the not reopening schools. So Ginger Goebbels was asked about this, and remember, she's the ultimate truth teller, probably the most qualified person to ever stand behind the podium at the White House. And this was her explanation as to why the teachers' unions, the Democrats' biggest donors, were able to get their way contrary to science.
As we were talking about yesterday, the objective is to have a better understanding of implementation, how it would work, and ensure that these guidelines can be implemented and they would not provide harm to the communities that they would be impacting.
But can you just explain maybe just a little bit more, you know, why the CDC needs all of this input from so many outside entities? Why can't it just come up with these science-based guidelines on its own?
Well, they do so to ensure that the recommendations are feasible to implement and that they adequately address the safety and well-being of individuals the guidance is aimed to protect. And that type of consultation is pretty standard as a part of their consideration processes.
Now, she's reading that answer, by the way. She's eyeballing down at the podium. She's got the prepared statement. She's quite skillful at being Ginger Goebbels. I wouldn't call that honest or open or, you know, truth-telling. But the idea, why do they need input from outside groups? They don't need input from outside groups. They've no need for input from outside groups. These are, I guess maybe if it's the National Federation of Epidemiologists or something, you might want to consult them. Second opinion on that. But a teachers' union has no particular medical knowledge, no knowledge of infectious diseases whatsoever. Seems like that's kind of an important thing that you should note, talk about, whatever, but they don't. She just said, well, no, it's not uncommon for us to get outside groups to weigh in on these things. No, it's not, especially when they're massive donors to your party. It is uncommon for massive donors to your party to override every single solitary piece of clinical data and information that had been collected to that moment, though. That's new. That's unique. But nope, Ginger Goebbels just keeps rolling on, rolling, rolling, rolling. Disgusting. Have you ever heard the name Gary O'Connor? Probably not. Gary O'Connor he's a Texas Democrat. He was the chairman of the the Democratic Party in, I'm trying to find out what county it is in. He's one of the county chairmen in Lamar County, Texas. After Tim Scott's speech, he took to his Facebook page and wrote something wildly racist about Tim Scott, as all Democrats do. I should point out that Gary O'Connor is a white guy. If you couldn't tell by the name, Gary O'Connor, his natural camouflage in a snowstorm is nudity. But he's a Democrat in good standing. So this story has a twist. Gary O'Connor took to his Twitter account while all the liberals online were calling him an Uncle Tom, calling Tim Scott an Uncle Tom. He's just an Uncle Tom. Gary O'Connor went to his Facebook page and said the following, quote, "I had hoped that Scott might show some common sense, but it seems clear he is little more than an Oreo with no real principles." An Oreo being, of course, black on the outside and white on the inside. How many of these white liberals do we have to see telling black conservatives, learn your place, get back on the thought plantation? Who do you think you are, differing from what we as white liberals have determined is the acceptable thought for people who look like you. How many? Because we're way up there in the count. Well, obviously there was blowback from that. Didn't last very long, but there was blowback from that. And Jerry O'Connor resigned. He did resign from his position. It's not, he actually apologized. He didn't give one of those I'm sorry to people who were offended sort of apologies. He resigned from the Lamar County chairmanship of the Democratic Party and issued the following statement to the Washington Examiner. Quote, I am deeply and sincerely sorry for my inappropriate and hurtful use of the racist term I used to describe Senator Tim Scott from my personal Facebook page. It was insensitive, and I embarrassed myself and my party by its use. I feel compelled to offer my resignation as chair of the Lamar County Democratic Party for consideration and for the county executive committee. Okay. That seems about right, and something at which, you know, you'd let a casual racist slur just sort of, you know, casually slip out on your Facebook page, you probably shouldn't be in that position, especially from a party, in a party that loves to point the racism finger at everybody. Well, there's a twist. It's like an M. Night Shyamalan movie. Here comes the twist. The Texas Tribune has the story. The Lamar County Democratic Party is not accepting the resignation of its chair after he reportedly used the slur Oreo to describe U.S. Senator Tim Scott, who is black, in a now-deleted Facebook page. Now, I love it. He reportedly did that. Well, he did it. And he apologized for doing it. But still, they go, reportedly. Because, you know, you never know. Who can believe anything? What are you going to do? Believe your lying eyes? No, it's just reportedly. It's asinine. Reporters are worthless. But they're refusing to accept his resignation. Representatives of the Lamar County Democrats met Tuesday to consider the resignation of Gary O'Connor. However, the party said in a statement that they decided not to accept the resignation after taking, quote, the last few days to reflect on this incident. This is a statement from the Lamar County Democrats. Quote, Lamar County Democrats recommit ourselves to conduct our private conversations and our public social media discussions with anti-racist, pro-reconciliation attitudes and language, the statement read. We strongly condemn bigotry of any kind and will continue our historic efforts to work toward justice and equality for all of our fellow citizens. But, let's be honest, Tim Scott is a Republican. Therefore, he is an Uncle Tom, and calling him an Oreo is completely and totally valid within the realm of today's political discourse. The last part there I just made up, but that's the subtext of everything I've read you thus far. God, it's so stupid. In a letter to Scott, a South Carolina Republican, O'Connor apologized for using the term, which refers to a black person who adopts characteristic mentality and behavior of white middle-class society, according to Merriam-Webster. See, the slur Oreo is in Merriam-Webster. But last year, when Mazie Hirono accused a Supreme Court nominee of using the term preference in reference to sexuality, that was an offensive term, and Merriam-Webster, within the hour, changed the definition of preference. But Oreo, no, it's just, hey, it's just referring to white conservatives. They refused to accept his resignation. They actually, in fact, praised him. They praised him. The Blaze praised him. Not only did the Blaze says, not only did the party reject O'Connor's resignation, they praised his, quote, activism for racial justice. Oh, racial justice. I mean, not for everybody. He's certainly not fighting for racial justice for those stinking Oreos out there. No. On May 4th, 2021, representatives of the Lamar County Democratic Party met to consider the resignation of party chairman. Our local Democrats have taken the last few days to reflect upon it. We chose not to accept it. Mr. O'Connor has written a public letter of apology to Senator Scott, and Lamar County Democrats join him in this apology. We should have kept what we say in private private. We should never have, we should have held our racist attitudes secret, the way good Democrats do. His remark is incompatible with his core values. I love that. I love that. Gary O'Connor, this is again the Lamar County Democrats. Gary O'Connor has led the Lamar County Democrats for 7 years, and his life of service, collaboration, and activism for racial justice is well known throughout the community. His recent remark is incompatible with his core values, end quote. What, did somebody hack his account? Was somebody holding a gun to Gary O'Connor's head as he was writing this racist slur on his Facebook page? Was there something else going on? Does somebody have Gary O'Connor's children? And are they holding them at an undisclosed location in exchange for him being a full-blown Klansman on his Facebook page? Is that what's going on? Nope. It's just incompatible. How? Well, it's incompatible with his core values. But he did it. Yeah, OJ's life up until the point that he cut off Ron and Nicole's head was incompatible with that of a double murderer. So can you imagine Johnny Cochran making that defense? Look, he hasn't been a murderer before. So, you know, track record. Am I right? He's like in his 50s or something. There's no way he did this because he hasn't murdered before. Yeah. Man, he did kind of beat the crap out of Nicole quite a few times. And, you know, escalating. I bet if you look through Gary O'Connor's soul, you might find that some escalating. If he writes this publicly, what was he writing privately? But, nope, they're not going to accept his resignation because there are no standards anymore. There are absolutely zero standards anymore. Then to make an example of this, we had the story yesterday of the juror from the Derek Chauvin trial up there in Minneapolis, right? Juror answered on the questionnaire, no, I never had nothing to do with anything. No, I'm not an activist. No, I didn't do this. I didn't do that. And all the questions, if you've ever been through jury duty, you've had to answer. Well, he lied. He lied. Juror number 52 came to Washington, D.C. for a rally at which he wore a Get Your Knee Off of Our Neck t-shirt, Black Lives Matter hat, came all the way to Washington, D.C. for this. He claims that it was a voter registration rally. Still, hey, everybody, spend a bunch of money to come thousands of miles to Washington, D.C. for a day in the midst of a pandemic so that we can rally together and get people to register to vote in a place where none of us live and we can all go home. Or, you know, you could just fill out a form online and request voter registration forms and sit outside the local grocery store and register people to vote. Whatever. Who wouldn't drop a grand to go with like-minded people to Washington, D.C. to rally people who aren't there to register to vote? Yeah, I'm going to call BS on that one. But yeah, he went there clearly a little bit more invested in the case than he let on in the jury questionnaire, where he said he had no opinion, no knowledge, none, didn't follow it, and certainly didn't attend any rallies or anything like that. Well, that kind of screws up the case, and Chauvin's lawyer has filed an appeal to have the verdict thrown out and request a new trial, which any good lawyer would do. Even a bad lawyer might do that one. So this is kind of big news that a juror lied on their paperwork, because that screws up a lot of things. Theoretically, that would be, you know, a felony for perjury, nobody gets prosecuted for perjury anymore. It's to the point, I really have to wonder why anybody bothers to tell the truth in court anymore, the way that they're going on that. So this is how the three networks last night covered this. Each of these clips is just a few seconds long, but one of them is decidedly not like the other. Now, if you're just betting right now, is it ABC, CBS, or NBC that is not like the other, you go ahead and place your bets in your head. First up, though, we'll go to ABC News. ABC News, David Muir. What a hairdo on that guy. They actually did a 2.5 minute long segment on this story because, again, it is kind of a big deal. This was the case of the year. The criminal case of the year, cities burned for a year over this, and because some jackass juror lied on their jury form, who knows what kind of influence he had in the jury room and everything, it throws the whole thing in doubt. It's problematic. So ABC News gave it the kind of time that it deserved. Now, I'm not going to play the full 2.5 minutes of it. I'm just going to play the 22-second or whatever it is introduction because it's about framing. ABC News was, by the way, the only of the three nightly newscasts to give it a full report. Everybody else just kind of gave it the framing. But listen to ABC News's framing here.
In the meantime, we're going to turn to that breaking headline I mentioned off the top tonight, late today, involving Derek Chauvin after that guilty verdict. Lawyers for the former Minneapolis police officer tonight are now asking for a new trial. Late today, filing a motion on several grounds, including what they claim is jury misconduct. It comes as a photo has surfaced showing one of the jurors wearing a Black Lives Matter t-shirt and cap and attending a march in Washington during which members of George Floyd's family spoke.
Now that seems pretty thorough, right? Because it is pretty thorough. Kind of important. Gives it the weight that it is. It's national news because the media made it national news, and they're following it up by continuing to report on the national news. Now we go to CBS News. Nora O'Donnell, I believe, was sitting in the big chair, and she just does the framing, the setup, but she does a fair job. ABC News went on to a 2-minute report about it. CBS News does a fair job of framing it, but they don't go into details. They don't go to a package. They don't throw to a reporter. This is the entirety of what CBS did, but still they do a thorough job.
And there is breaking news tonight from Minnesota, where Derek Chauvin's lawyer has filed a motion for a new trial in the murder of George Floyd, citing juror misconduct. Now, the accusation comes after a photo surfaced of one of the jurors, Brandon Mitchell, at a march in Washington last summer where Floyd's family spoke. Mitchell can be seen wearing a T-shirt reading, "Get your knee off our necks." Well, the juror who spoke out after the verdict tells our CBS station WCCO he was in D.C. for a voter registration rally, not a protest. Chauvin, a former Minneapolis police officer, faces up to 40 years in prison at his sentencing next month.
Okay, pretty thorough report. Not in depth, but thorough. Gives you the gist of it. That's where the there's a voter registration drive in Washington, D.C. Yeah, because everybody needs to travel 1,000 miles to rally to register people to vote who weren't there. Or either that, or Democrats were concerned about not winning Maryland, D.C., or Virginia. Both of which were laughable. Now we come to NBC News, where Lester Holt told us 3 weeks ago that fairness is overrated in journalism. Yeah, if you put your money in your head on Lester Holt and NBC News, you win. Here's how they covered it, and this is NBC News in its entirety.
And just in this evening, former Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin has filed an appeal for a new trial 2 weeks after he was convicted of murder and manslaughter charges in the death of George Floyd. His lawyer says Chauvin's ability to have a fair trial was affected by pretrial publicity.
That's it. Pre-trial publicity, not the juror who lied, the juror who attended the rally, the juror who went and saw Floyd, traveled, I don't know, it's probably 1,500 miles, to Washington, D.C. to hear Floyd's family members speak, as well as I think Al Sharpton was there and all the usual suspects. Yeah, no, a totally free and fair and impartial jurist over there. According, well, by implication, by NBC News, whose chief anchor says fairness is overrated in journalism. Oopsie. Man, time is just flying. We're already out of it.
just has been a fun day. My motor mouth got the better of me, but that's why I make the big bucks, ladies and gentlemen. Don't worry. Tomorrow is another day. I appreciate you listening. Excuse me. As I cough. I don't have COVID. I promise I don't have COVID. At least I hope I don't have COVID. No, I don't have COVID. I have to see somebody to get COVID. Anyway, that is it for today. I appreciate you listening. Thanks for the use of your ears. Don't forget to be back here tomorrow. Same bat time, same bat channel. Have a great one.